me just take your levels. Can you please spell, can you state your name and spell your last name and give it your title as well?
Greg Scarlatiou, Scarlatoiu, Executive Director of the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea, HRNK.
All right, great. Thank you, Greg. I'm sorry, can you hold on for just 1 second?
Oh, certainly.
Make sure our microphone is working.
Please. Very aggressive purges were conducted against Christians in the early years of the Kim Il-sung regime. Of course, wrong thinking does not necessarily mean that that only Christians are perceived as being wrong thinkers. For example, there have been instances where
Mr. Sarlati,
Marxists,
sorry.
Marxists, pretty much Orthodox Marxists.
Let me interrupt you. I'm sorry, I'm having some difficulties with the recording.
Certainly.
I'm actually going to have to re-ask you a couple of the questions, if you don't mind. All right.
Go ahead, please.
I'm sorry. I just noticed that my time clock had stopped on it. All right. I'm sorry. Do you have a few minutes? It'll be the same exact questions.
No, but, sure, yes.
Okay. Let me just start from the beginning. So I'm not sure exactly where it stopped recording. This is Amanda Scott from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C., and I'm speaking with Greg Sarlati, Executive Director of the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea. This week, your organization released a report detailing North Korea's social classification system, also known as Songbun. Can you summarize this report for our listeners briefly?
At birth, each North Korean is assigned a social classification status, a Songbun status, by the government based on the perceived political loyalty of one's family to the regime. North Korea is a UN member state, and it should abide by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which asserts that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. However, all North Koreans are classified as loyal, wavering, or hostile, and face discrimination on the basis of this classification in terms of food distribution, housing, residential location, employment, education, and all aspects of a person's life. In North Korea, the so-called wavering and hostile classes are estimated to total about 72% of the population, or more than 16 million North Koreans. Basically, only the small, politically loyal class is entitled to live in Pyongyang and benefit from extensive privileges.
Can you tell us a little bit more about those privileges that are afforded to those, particularly in the loyal class, compared to how those that may live in the hostile class, what their daily lives are actually like?
Certainly. Being part of the loyal class, the core loyal class, means first and foremost better access to food, better access to housing, better access to residential location, and most of those living in Pyongyang, the capital city of North Korea, actually belong to the core loyal class. So basically, this involves better access to employment. The best jobs available in North Korea are made available to those of higher Songbun, belonging to the loyal class, and also access to education is also based on the social classification system, and those belonging to the loyal class have better access to an education, especially when they come of age, especially when they reach the age of 17, 18, and they go to college. Certainly when it comes to North Korea's most prestigious university, for example, Kim Il-sung University or Kim Tech Technical College, probably merit has to do with it, has something to do with it as well, because these are top colleges. But undoubtedly, Songbun, one's social status certainly is a fundamental determinant, provides the fundamental determination of whether one is to go to an elite school or not. So pretty much Songbun governs all aspects of life in North Korea.
Now, was it possible for a person to move within caste, either being downgraded or, I guess, upgraded to a higher caste?
It would be nearly impossible to move up for one who has been classified as a member of the hostile class. By the way, in instances where members of the hostile class have been confined to political prisoner camps in remote areas of North Korea, guilt by association is applied up to three generations. In the case of those belonging to the wavering class, under exceptional circumstances, it may be possible to be promoted to the loyal or core class if one is perceived as having done deeds that proved extraordinary loyalty to the regime, if one did extraordinary things that tremendously helped the Kim regime.
Can you explain, you mentioned that a person's actions can affect three generations of their descendants. How does that work? I guess, how does, how in particular does your actions affect the classifications of your family members?
Well, we've had a very recent example, a book by Blaine Harden, the Washington Post journalist, entitled Escape from Camp 14. This is one of North Korea's political prisoner camps. This book recently published tells the story of Shin Dong-hyuk, a young North Korean born in the North Korean gulag, who miraculously managed to escape and later find his way to South Korea. He was born in a political prisoner camp because his father's brothers had gone to South Korea during the Korean War. So his only fault, the only reason why he was born in a political prison camp, was that his uncles had run away to South Korea. What we hear from North Korean defectors who once were political prisoner camp detainees is that one of the questions often asked by many of the political prisoner camp detainees is that many of them don't know why they are there. These are all perceived associations. So basically, one might end up in a political prisoner camp for wrongdoing, wrong thinking, wrong knowledge, wrong association, or wrong class background. For example, what would qualify as wrongdoing? For example, being on the wrong or losing side of a bureaucratic, factional, or political dispute within the Korean Workers' Party. Defacing or being perceived as failing to take adequate care of photographic images of Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il, and probably Kim Jong-un as well, complaining about conditions, criticizing the government. Then there's wrong thinking. Wrong thinking includes expressing or supporting ideas that do not conform to the official ideology. For example, evidence of belief in Protestant Christianity, which is perceived as a great threat. There have actually been Orthodox Marxists who thought that the self-reliance ideology, the Juche ideology of North Korea, or dynastic succession within Kim Il-sung's family, was contrary to the spirit and tenets of Marxism-Leninism. So they're automatically downgraded to hostile class and sent away to political prisoner camps. There's wrong knowledge, and I could give you the example. North Korean students or diplomats who happened to be studying or working in Eastern Europe in the late 1980s, in 1989, when communism collapsed all over Eastern Europe. They were recalled to North Korea, and they were immediately dispatched to labor camps to prevent their knowledge of the collapse of state socialism from spreading inside North Korea. There is wrong association, which involves being part of a family whose husband, father, or grandfather was a collaborator with the Japanese occupation of Korea, or being the offspring of somebody who was a Presbyterian elder or a deacon, or the offspring of somebody who was suspected of supporting South Korea during the Korean War or having subsequently defected to Korea. Then, of course, there is wrong class background that qualifies one for inclusion in the hostile class. This would include those who were aristocratic landowners or otherwise privileged bourgeoisie during the Japanese colonial regime in Korea. So basically, all of these perceived wrongdoing, wrong thinking, wrong knowledge, wrong association, wrong class background were very likely to result in one's being confined to a political prisoner camp and the family of that individual being confined to political prisoner camps up to three generations. Why three generations, you might ask? This is a feudal practice going back to the days of the Joseon dynasty, which preceded the 40 years of Japanese occupation period that in turn preceded Kim Il-sung's regime in North Korea.
Are there any signs that this system will change now that Kim Il-sung is taken over as the country's leader, Kim Jong-un?
One question that has been asked pertains to the role of money, informal markets, and bribery have begun to play in North Korea. The question is, of course, whether money, market activity, and bribes are beginning to affect, to erode the Songbun system. The fact of the matter is that those with best access to economic opportunities are still those of good Songbun, still those belonging to the core class, the loyal class. Now, in the mid to late 1990s, as communism collapsed all over Eastern Europe, North Korea could no longer rely on its allies for aid. North Korea had tried to demonetize its economy by putting in place a public distribution system. This public distribution system collapsed, resulting in a great famine in the mid to late 1990s, which may have killed as many as, well, anywhere between 300,000 and 3 million North Koreans, most likely around 1 million North Koreans. Small informal markets where vegetables, food, goods, contraband goods imported from China were being traded, not as the result of top-down reform, but as a coping mechanism to enable people to survive and avoid falling victim to yet another famine. Basically, informal supply chains have developed along these markets. Now, of course, the regime did try to clamp down on market activity in late 2001 by coming up with a confiscatory reform that wiped out the savings of many North Koreans engaged in these activities. Certainly, there are many in the wavering class who have profited from market activity, but in order to be able to trade at these markets, in order to be able to have access to be part of this informal people's economy, one needs to have access to people of good Songbun, to people belonging to the loyal class, people belonging to the core class. They are the ones who can extend opportunities to others. They're the ones who can share little pieces of the pie they have, and they're also the ones who can extend protection to those engaged in market activities, because technically these activities are still not legal, and crackdowns can be conducted at any time. So this is an excellent question. Is Kim Jong-un changing anything? Kim Jong-un's story is a very interesting story. His mother was a Japanese Korean. She was a dancer, a member of a dance troupe whom Kim Jong-il fell in love with. And certainly descendants of Korean Japanese returned to North Korea were classified as lower Songbun in North Korea's classification system. So Kim Jong-un himself is the son of the former leader of North Korea and the grandson of a former leader of North Korea, and his mother comes from what would be strictly perceived from a North Korean viewpoint as a person of lower Songbun. Does this mean that he will take great interest in dismantling the Songbun system? Probably not. And on the contrary, he might feel tempted to hide, restrict access to information about his mother and her background, And also, he is very likely to, very unlikely to shake things up so soon in the process, even if he wanted to. Let us remember that the reason why he was selected to be his father's successor was not that he was seen as a potential reformer, but that he was seen as the one of the three sons who was most likely to follow in the father's footsteps. It is certainly uncommon for a country that draws on, to a certain extent, on Confucian culture to have not the eldest son, but the youngest son take over from the father. For a variety of reasons, this was the case in North Korea, and one of the main reasons was probably that he was perceived as the one who looked very much alike like his grandfather and was most likely to follow in his father's footsteps. Those surrounding him, that hard group, hardcore of hardliners surrounding him and supporting him throughout this leadership transition process, are very unlikely to be reformers. And even over the short run, over the short to medium term, even if he wanted to change things, it wouldn't be possible. And certainly the North Korean society, the North Korean regime, relies so much on the Songbun social classification system that it would certainly be difficult to change things overnight. That being said, it is imperative that North Korea, the North Korean regime, take immediate steps towards the full accounting, a full accounting of those who are being held at the political prison camps. It is of the essence that North Korea begins considering the dismantlement of these political prisoner camps. For so many years now, for two decades, more than two decades, we have been discussing the dismantlement of North Korea's nuclear and missile program. And the time has come to acknowledge human rights issues as important as other top issues, political security issues, hard political security issues, and begin to take steps towards the complete, verifiable, and irreversible dismantlement of North Korea's political prisoner camps.
Great, thank you. That's pretty much the end of what I was going to ask. Is there anything else that you'd like to add or any areas that you feel I didn't spend enough time discussing?
No, I think you have structured your interview very nicely. You have probably already seen our report. I would very highly and warmly recommend both the Hidden Gulag and the Songbun Report, our two most recent reports published this year.
Okay, definitely.
And I look forward to staying in touch.
Great. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Amanda. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Are there any signs that the system will change now that Kim Jong-un has taken over as the country's leader?